This episode is sponsored by United Refrigeration and Westermeyer Industries, revolutionizing your HVACR experience. Visit URI.com for all your HVACR needs, offering real-time inventory, personalized pricing, and a nearby stock feature. Access quick pick replacement parts and branch details effortlessly. With 350-plus fully stocked locations across North America, our knowledgeable staff are ready to assist with the solutions you need. Exclusive offer. Use code ARPOD on URI.com to get a $10 gift card when purchasing the Westermeyer Oil Float, part number W4300-38F. These high-performance floats are not just compatible with their own oil separators, but also available as a crossover model. Conveniently stocked at United Refrigeration. That's code ARPOD to claim your $10 gift card. Visit URI.com now.
John, how can you always have the right TV for the right application without carrying hundreds of valves on your truck?
You can carry the hundreds of valves on a trailer behind your truck.
That's too funny. That would work, but how are you going to do that? Maybe there's an easier way.
You can use Sporland's interchangeable cartridge style Type Q and Type BQ TEVs. Type Q is a conventional design and Type BQ is a balanced port TEV.
Well, come on, I need easy. How easy is it?
Easy is 1, 2, 3.
And it serves thousands of unique applications. So what's the process? How do I put this together?
First, you select the thermostatic element assembly. Then you select the body that you need. Then you select the right size cartridge for the application to get the proper capacity TEV for your application. And then I guess it should also be said you want to actually assemble those into a single valve.
That'd probably be a good idea.
Indeed.
These easy to select and assemble valves mean you're always carrying the right valve for the right job then. If folks want to learn more, what do they do?
You can go to Sporland.com and find more information on the Type Q and BQ thermostatic expansion valves.
I guess that's Jim and John for Sporland signing off.
Good early icy morning with the Vasa Refrigeration Podcast. Here with us, Brett Wetzel. We have Kevin Compass, and we have a special guest, Adam Chapman from Westermeyer Industries. We're going to talk about, for years, as far as CO2, they've been using coalescing oil separators for the fact that coalescing oil separators have the capability to be able to essentially be able to separate all the way up from full capacity of that actual separator all the way down to minimal. And because of that, they're trying to get something that has a little bit less carryover, so we're not carrying over that oil out into the system, so we have full separation. Westermeyer Industries has developed a helical separator, and we're going to talk about that today. So,
thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
So I think one of the things that I want to explain is centrifugals are not, use the word helical, and I understand everybody uses that, so I'll give you a pass once.
Yep.
But the centrifugals are not an unproven technology. They're used in supermarkets today. They've used them on subcritical CO2 racks. So this is not like this, oh my gosh, we're not sure this is even going to work type scenario. And a lot of industries, even outside of rack refrigeration, but even air conditioning, screw compressor applications, they're using centrifugals, and primarily the reason for that is because of the high concentrations of oil as far as the screw compressor people go. I think that that's really the first thing, is that when people are looking at this, they're like, it's not coalescing, I'm not sure it's actually going to work. We'll get into some of the processes for that, but it's, I think the first thing is, this is not, we got Gary Westermeyer developed all this 30 years ago, and so we've got 30 years of knowledge around centrifugals and how they operate. So this isn't, I wouldn't say it's groundbreaking, but it's certainly going to be a game changer in CO2 market, I believe, for a multitude of reasons. And we can chat about that a little bit.
You're going to get into the standard HFO and HFC system where, you know, explaining a little bit about the capacity that we do have with centrifugals first. Can we do that?
Yeah.
All right.
I think the rule of thumb is, for centrifugals, people try to stay within 30% of the max.
Yeah.
There's some undersizing that you can do, and I know there's a lot of manufacturers that try to undersize. They take a penalty on the pressure drop side, because let's face it, these systems aren't running at 100% anyway, very rarely anyway. And so they try to undersize them to cover themselves on the lower end. These centrifugals that we're going to offer in the CO2 space, has that same technology and framework as when we're sizing these is, listen, let's plan on taking a slightly higher penalty on pressure drop. And we're anticipating the threshold for the sizing for these new centrifugals is no more than about 6 PSI pressure drop at 100% loaded. Okay. And that is my experience, and I know you guys probably have a lot more than that, is we're talking with coalescing. People are seeing 12 on startup.
Yeah. No, it's usually like 10, 12, yeah. I mean, at times.
With compressor cycling, yeah. We're just and we haven't even got into the oil carryover rate that we're seeing on compressors and how that impacts coalescing too. And that's not going to be the case for these. And we can talk about that a little bit too.
I was going to say, just so people understand about oil carryover, do you want to explain that a little bit?
Honestly, I think you guys probably are, in my experience, it's really the amount of oil that as a percent of the total mass flow is then carried into the refrigerant stream. That's probably the best way I can explain it, unless you guys have a better way.
With a CO2 system, it gets oil carryover almost doubles when it's running transcritical because you have so much more mass flow, and then you're also running a colder vapor coming back. So it's lowering the superheat in that compressor, and it's causing it to not totally wash out, but it's causing it to carry more oil over.
Then with the problems that you have with the superheat control, because a lot of times the Bitzer and Copeland, they'll tell you they want about 36 degrees superheat on their subcritical compressors. And I just found this out about a chart the other day where, you know, their superheat on their medium temp can be in the 20 range, but it's affected by the actual temperature of the oil, because obviously what happens to the viscosity of the oil is going to affect how much oil carry over. But long story short, basically, it's just the amount of oil being carried out of that compressor that's going to the oil separator is essentially oil carryover.
And we're hearing that, and the rule of thumb that everybody says, plan for 2% oil carryover.
Sit on the throne of lies.
Yeah. Yes, and so
maybe 20.
Yeah, and for coalescing elements,
yeah,
anything over 2%, all bets are off.
Yeah.
You're just not going to get an element that can support anything more than 2%.
You're not going to get the filtration. You know what I mean? Like, otherwise, you'd have a super high pressure drop.
And basically what happens on a coalescing is the refrigerant, it flows from the inside out. And if you have this high oil concentration, the element becomes saturated. And especially with these higher mass flows, we're talking that the oil does not have enough time to coalesce, in truth to the name, to coalesce on the outside of the filter and then to get heavy enough to then drop out. And so we're just having a ton of bypass when you have a situation like that, especially when it gets into supercritical state and you've got these significantly higher mass flows and you have higher discharge temperatures, and these elements struggle in that. And so what's good about the the centrifugal is there's no barrier there for oil that has to feed through. It is the higher you push these things, the better they are. You're really ramming this thing as much as you can pump into it, and it just slings the oil to the outside, runs down, and that's, again, that's why the screw compressor people like them, is because they get that nice constant load and they just pour the coals to those things and they work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really the thing that differentiates centrifugals to coalescing in this situation where we've got a lot of oil that these separators are going to see. The barrier to separate oil is significantly larger with centrifugals.
I love an undersized centrifugal. Yeah. They're workhorses.
Yep.
For the penalty you take, it's totally worth it.
Right.
What, 4-6 pounds of pressure drop just to make sure that it's actually sized properly in order to do so.
Well, and that's the big thing. And we're going to put a few provisions inside of this centrifugal to help with some lower load things.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we're not on our ratings. We're not giving... we're not taking much of that into account because there's a lot of factors and some additional testing we're working with a few people on. But we're going down the ratings that we have listed. It's going to be down to 26%. But everybody I'm talking to, you're not going to have – nobody's going to allow for a rack. And you tell me if I'm wrong here, but they're really not going to allow for that rack to probably operate below that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So
if the rack's not tuned right, where they have inverse controls, like basically fighting each other,
right,
where you end up getting, Kevin's had more experience with this than I have, essentially when you have that medium temp compressor totally just fall off, where you don't have that load because of improperly set controls.
Okay. And I think that this is not going to be a throw it in and everybody's, it's all going to fix it. There's going to be some training and there's going to be some, let's face it, like coalescing though, it's going to help clean the system.
Mm-hmm.
These don't have that. And so there's going to have to be a lot of monitoring of these systems. So you're not, because it's not going to, the coalescing is fail safe. It catches all the junk and helps keep your system clean. But these things are not going
to
have.
They're just really meant just to separate the oil. That's their only real job.
Right. So you have a trade off here. Do you want, and it really some of the pros and cons to this is, so for one of the benefits of a centrifugal, like I mentioned, separates high amounts of oil, very effective at that, at within the range. But the issue, though, is you don't have the serviceability and cleanability like you do a coalescing.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, that's a drawback, too, because you have, with a coalescing, you got service costs. You constantly have to monitor that filter, and that takes time both through the contractor and at the supermarket level. That's a commitment on money and resources that, frankly, you have to weigh your options here. So really, that's part of that.
So I'm looking here at the data sheet because I was trying to pull it up on the internet, but apparently I didn't know it's not up there yet. But I pulled the data sheet when I went to go talk to you yesterday. And so the largest separator that you guys have that will be able to do this is 54 discharge CFM.
Correct. And that pretty much is about the largest size of coalescing that we carry. That was Qatar. I anticipate there'll probably be some larger models.
Okay.
That we'll roll out. But again, when you get in these larger sizes, you tend to have more compressors.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not sure that the industry is quite ready yet for cold storage and some of these other things that they're going to be interested in centrifugal just yet.
So now that I'm asking you, because I can't do the math that quick, and I know that you've probably done the math 60,000 times. So what does that equate to as far as horsepower, like horsepower on the rack?
That's a great question. I don't even know that.
I'm sorry to put you on the spot.
Well, that's all right. Because we just don't look at it that way.
Okay.
We stay very much, we calculate the CFM
mm-hmm.
and oil concentration, and that's really, so I've not even backed into what that looks like. If I tell you the number of compressors,
yeah.
I would say that the largest size probably would equate to maybe a 5 or 6 compressor system.
Medium temp and low temp together?
Yes.
Or just medium temp straight up?
Medium temp and low temp.
Once you get to that point and you're getting bigger than that, it just makes more sense to go multiple separators, wouldn't it?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because you would essentially, as long as the pipe size and as long as the pressure drop in the piping would be even, then you wouldn't really have to worry about it. It's like being split on a condenser.
Right.
That's why we put the same even amount of valves on there on the in and the out to get the adequate amount of flow. So I guess doing that, you'd have no problem with that.
I mean, yeah, running multiple separators, too, you could downsize them and load them more.
Yep. Yeah, true.
And there's some CO2 systems that are using 2 coalescing, so you can
yep.
isolate one, still keep the system running. I have no reason to think that you couldn't do the same thing. You're going to see higher pressure drop if you've got one that you've taken down, but let's face it, it's probably going to still handle it. It just depends on the loading. But yeah, I think that's probably an option.
Okay. Go ahead and start getting into what you're getting. We got sidetracked. It happens a lot here. But just start off, where are you going to go?
Yeah, so again, like I was mentioning, like the pros and cons for centrifugals. Again, people are going to have to accept the fact that if I want all this, do I want a clean system or do you want a system that's going to separate oil?
Mm-hmm.
And certainly coalescing has its place and it separates oil effectively. It's just these high oil carryover rates have really made it apparent that we had to launch this product line.
But it essentially goes hand in hand, right? If you don't have a separation system that's actually working right, it's going to cause higher temperatures at your compressor, which essentially is going to cause more oil degradation, right? It's rob Peter to pay Paul. It's either we're going to have a clean system that's going to separate the oil to make sure we get the oil back, or potentially have a blowout where we don't have any oil in there because of the blowout on the coalescing, and then we run higher discharge temperatures and then end up eating compressors.
Right. Yeah, and I think it's not going to be just a simple, yeah, let's just take it. Because all the conversations I've had so far this week,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of interest. There's a clear site out there that says, like, we want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
We just really are not sure yet because the comfort of coalescing is a downfall because it's like we know that it can operate those lower ranges.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, but I have to remind people, the refrigeration industry, especially the supermarket people, is we've used centrifugals before. So don't get fearful of that. And with a minimum load, I think you just have to make sure that everybody's on the same page about what that means.
The first time I watched guys walk into a Walmart and they're going from 2 1/8 down to 7 1/8, everybody's like, this isn't going to work. This is,
what are they doing?
Dumb. Like, yep. And then it's okay, we took out 8 gallons of oil. We're on number 9 now. It just,
yep.
It went from lazy separation to, holy cow, this is just, this thing's just separating oil like a pig.
Right, yep.
Like, we can't keep up. And I've done one of these CO2 separators. Like, I did one of the first hill racks with it, and it ran phenomenal, even under low load.
Yep.
Like, phenomenal.
And has that system seen the high,
yep,
the summer time?
Yeah, as far as I know, they had zero issues over there. It was a really small system,
right,
which is even more of a test because it had basically no load.
Right.
But it ran phenomenally.
Right.
And I honestly think this is the answer to the oil issues that we're having with the coalescence blowing out and everything else. The coalescence have their place, but I think this is the answer to stop the oil carryover rate. I mean,
and everybody says, I've seen it, I see the oil carryover rate. So it's a matter of just, to your point, somebody's gonna have to walk in, see a system, go, wow, this thing is really pouring the coals to the oil separation. So, and that's why when we launched this too, we put a side glass on the separator. It's not that those models are not even like a built-in reservoir style,
mm-hmm,
because we've got to keep adding solutions and tools to these things. Because right now with a lot of the coalescing, there's no side glass on there, so there's just all this guessing, and this whole concept, like the black box, and this thing just, it works. So just believe that it works, and we got to put some more tools out there to fix some of these problems.
I appreciate when people actually take that in consideration, because you're like, there's magic happening in there, but I don't really know what's happening. So having that sight glass there is, oh, it is actually separating oil.
There's oil in there. So that's always the big thing, is we launched a few other products that have some sight glasses, because there's not many sight glasses on a CO2 system. So it's when people are like, well, I'm not sure, I'm tripping on oil, but there's oil in the bottom of the separator. So there's oil that's being separated. So let's
that,
down the line.
That's always been a huge issue, because it's, okay, is the optical eye bad, or is there actually oil in there? And it's like, having that sight glass there is killer.
Yep.
I think that's a huge improvement. I've been doing another manufacturer's stuff where they make their own separators.
Yep.
And there's a full high pressure system. There's no sight glasses on it. The only way to know if there's oil in it is to pull the lid off the filter and look down inside and see if there's oil in it.
I'm looking at the port at the bottom, so I'm assuming that's gonna be for some sort of level indicator, just to let you know that it is in fact doing that as well.
Yeah, correct. And a lot of manufacturers will use that to trigger a solenoid to then send the oil back to the external reservoir, and then
so they're not pushing out high pressure discharge out to and continue to have to blow that off, because anytime you do that on a CO2 system, you're having to expel that pressure back into the flash tank, which is adding more quantity of load to the medium temp compressors.
And let's face it, I've heard you guys talk about flash tank pressures are probably maintaining that and controlling that is probably one of the biggest culprits to some of this.
100%. Like that leads to more oil issues than anything on a CO2 system is that flash tank.
And the optical eye, too, people are using, some people are saying, well, I'm going to just open it, set a timer, and let it drain instead of using solenoids. And it just, I think we have some refinement to that process.
Mm-hmm.
Oil has always been a challenge for a lot of people.
Redheaded stepchild, they don't really think about it. It's like, oh, the refrigeration's working. I don't have to worry about the oil at all.
To me, simpler is better. Full high pressure oil system with high pressure Trax oils or OMCs,
yep,
that's as simple as you can get.
Right.
There's no logic in a computer telling it to do anything. There's no, oh, okay, is this working? No, it's the same controller that we've been using for the last 15 years.
But then you're going to have 1,500 pounds of oil pressure, I've seen a leak at 30 pounds. I don't want to see a leak at 1,500 pounds.
You ever seen a hydraulic leak at 4,000 pounds?
Oh, I don't want
to. Yeah, so it's going to be everywhere no matter what. 30 pounds of oil pressure makes a huge mess. 1,500 pounds of oil pressure is going to make a huge mess too. But at that point, the other benefit of running the high pressure system that everybody forgets about is the ability to float the flash tank pressure up, and then the ability to float the suction pressure up even higher to save energy. That's the other caveat to this that everybody's missing, is now you could take that suction pressure and float it up to the moon, because now you don't have that flash tank setting your minimum oil pressure.
Setting your differential in order to make sure you have that flow. Yeah.
So do you, but the distribution of oil, do you see that between multiple compressors a high pressure oil system, does that, do you think that creates a challenge with getting each compressor that's appropriate oil?
No, as long as it has enough oil in the reservoir or in the separator, then it's usually fine. As long as it's centered, like we have a couple stores with high pressure oil systems, and I think they run better than the stores that are low pressure oil systems.
Interesting.
And when you say low oil pressure system, you're talking like a 75 pound differential from the flash tank up to the sucker.
Most manufacturers are trying to run 100, 125. And then, like, you try to float the suction, and they just absolutely come unglued because, like, they have to have that differential in order to do it, and they're just wasting tons of energy.
Right.
Essentially, what I'm just going to try to answer this, so, like, when you're saying if you're floating the suction up 20 pounds, the flash tank essentially should be floating at that same rate,
well,
so you keep that same differential that they originally wanted.
You could or you couldn't. You could do either way. If you float your flash tank pressure up, you reduce your flash gas on the rack, so you reduce your load.
Okay.
And it also, it frees up load for other stuff. But
when you do that, you're actually adding more flash.
Adding less.
Would it be less?
Yes, because you're raising the pressure in the flash tank, so it has less vapor coming into it.
But then you, from the evaporation process to there, that thing that adds a little bit of flash gas waste on the enthalpy?
It actually decreases the rack load.
Okay.
Like, it for sure decreases the rack load. But at that point, with that high-pressure system, it eliminates all of these negatives where you couldn't really float the suction, and now you're saving more energy.
And there's, historically, we have not put out we're likely going to put out a reservoir version of this. And here's a couple of reasons why. One of the things is people are like, I've been told this, that we got to make sure that we're maintaining a column of oil in there. I have a feeling that because of the process of coalescing and its ability to maybe keep up with some of the oil separation, they collected to that. The other problem is with coalescing, you have to have the distance above the separator to be able to service this. So once you do that, you got your, if you had a reservoir coalescing version, you've got the height of the reservoir, then you have the rest of the height of the separator. Then you have to have another 12 to 16 inches above that to even be able to get the filter out. With this, we could go taller, but you don't have to worry about the additional 12 to 16 inches above that. So we should be able to allow for rack manufacturers to get these to fit.
That's going to reduce the footprint then, because then you're not going to have an extra reservoir that you have to be like, all right, we'll fit it in all the way over there behind the reservoir.
That you can't see.
Yes. What do you mean? I don't know what you're talking about.
And again, now, to that point, and then we don't have the headroom that we don't have to play with either to get the filter out.
So. What do you mean? All the racks, you just see they just have a cutout right in the top just to get that coalescing out of there, right?
The only challenge becomes adding oil.
And do they, typically, do you guys add it from the top of the
usually you end up adding to the top of the reservoir. The only challenge of the high pressure system is
to blow it down.
You have to blow it down in order to add the oil. So that's the only challenge. We're doing that right now with the high pressure systems. Usually you got to pull the lids of the temperites or the coalescent filters on this particular manufacturer. You got to pull it, and they want you to, at the same time, they want you to change the filters because they're usually probably blown.
They're open, yeah.
Yeah, they're open.
So it sounds like we maybe need to add a port to that.
It would have to be somewhere where, because you got to remember, a lot of these cats don't have some kind of like hydraulic oil fill. Mm-hmm. So when we're teaching it, what we tell them to do is go to, if it is a lower temp system where it has a reservoir, bleed that reservoir down. Because you can isolate that off the flash tank, isolate it off the inlet, isolate it off the outlet. Blow that pressure all the way down, because we're only at GWP of 1, and then blow it down to about 20 PSI, and then fill it up with as much oil to fill up the reservoir, whereas, and then there's no worry about, you don't have to pull a vacuum, because you've already now still have pressure in there, right? And then you just reintroduce that gas right directly in there.
Okay.
As long as the manufacturer put a ball valve in front of the separator, and then a check valve in the outlet,
right.
I mean, you could blow it down. If you guys put a port on the top
quickly.
To right. blow it down and where you could just add oil on the top,
right.
it'd be killer.
All right, I'm making a note of that.
But yeah, that's the only issue with the high pressure system is getting the actual oil into it.
Stop this. Everyone's getting free R&D. Adam's over there. What do you say? One more time?
Hey, so that do anything without consulting you guys anyway.
Yeah.
Name a product we've launched.
I know, I'm just kidding.
But seriously.
No, I know.
But we do that for a reason. We don't... If you design products in a vacuum, you're going to end up launching something and be like, yeah, this sucks. I really hate it. And let's face it, probably every product we've come out with is really geared around service.
Mm-hmm.
than it is a request by an OEM.
That's why you get. That's why we talk about this all the time. You're like, what do you guys think about this? What issues have you guys been seeing?
Right.
And has it been working?
Again, and because let's face it, if we fix the service piece, then the customer is happier.
Oh yeah.
And
today's episode is sponsored by the RefRa Shield RDP Series Differential Pressure Monitors from Westermeyer Industries, now available for transcritical CO2 systems in addition to other common pressures and refrigerants. When the filter element of your coalescing oil separator is contaminated, it can hurt your system's performance and efficiency. But how do you know when it's time to replace that filter? Wait too long to replace, and you could end up with a nasty filter blowout. But replacing too often can be a waste of time and money. The answer is installing a differential pressure monitor. The RDP series differential pressure monitors, including the new transcritical CO2 model, are available now from Westermeyer Industries. To find out more information, email sales@westermeyerin.com. That's WESTERMEYERIN.com.
You know, I love all the rack manufacturers, but it's up to them to just adopt it.
Yeah. It has to. It's honestly a better option going to the centrifugal, especially an undersized centrifugal. Let's be honest, like most of these CO2 stores and systems are way oversized.
Yeah.
They're sized for the worst case scenario for they're going to run for 3 days and
the highest ambient ever.
Yeah, and it's just not feasible the way that they're all doing it. And they're all doing the same thing, and it's like, then it's minus 10 outside and we're running a compressor that's 50% load, like half loaded, and it's just falling on its face, and then we lose all oil separation.
Yeah, I'm wondering. What I'm concerned about is 10 years now from this conversation, when remodels start happening, where they're like, we're going to put another CO2 rack, and we're going to take X amount of BTU load, but like, it sounds like with the separator, because now we're not stringent on that once you go below the 25 or 30%, we have no separation in that centrifugal.
Let me ask you this, Adam: could you start to block off the discharge and raise the discharge
cause
pressure,
a pressure drop.
Cause a pressure drop and make a centrifugal separate more?
You would get some separation, but there is a balance between
flow.
Centrifugal separation, and there's a portion in this calculation that's gravity. So there's two relationships there, and they're not perfectly, depending on the application, there's not, or conditions, there's not like this perfect scenario where you have the same amount of centrifugal and the same amount of gravity. So you have to maintain both of those at certain levels to feel like you've got a good wrap around that. So you'd get some better, but I don't think that you would end up getting a holistically better or equally as good separator than you had if it was properly sized. Now, let's face it, centrifugals in HFC and so critical CO2, you're right, retrofits start happening.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you were just talking about this, somebody walks into a rack room and they're like, that was a 2 1/8, and now they've reduced it down to a 7/8 or whatever. When they start adding stuff or taking stuff away from stores, that's where you get the calls like, you guys got to come out here and help us fix
this. There's some kind of engineering mess up, but we had it where we had a regular HFO, HFC system, and they ended up taking 40,000 BTUs off of it.
Yep.
You know, it was one of those racks where they size it to, as Kevin would say, send it to Jesus as far as trying to get that as much flow out of there as possible.
Right.
And when they did that, the guy would call me up. He's like, there's only two compressors running, suction still maintaining, but I have no oil.
Right.
So I said, shut it down and then basically let all the cases warm up and turn it on. And all of a sudden, he opens up that valve. And now he has 5 compressors running, then the 1.5.
Right.
And now he's actually starting to separate oil. And this happened time after time. And it caused multiple amount of oil issues. So, like, I don't think people understand, like, that's the reason why you're like, why did it go from 1.5 all the way down to 3/8 of an inch? You know what I mean? Not that small. But,
right,
like, you understand what I'm saying. And, like, they don't understand how those things are sized.
It works great. I learned the hard way about undersizing some coalescence, though.
Yep.
I had that one store where we undersized it, and it got worse.
Yep. Because it blows through.
Yeah.
It does not have enough time to take that oil and come in contact with itself. It gets heavy and then it falls out.
Yeah.
It just blows it through.
Then you put the same size centrifugal in it and it's just like an oil separating machine.
Right.
Just like.
So that really comes down to, like with retrofits, yeah, there's going to be a time where we're going to look at this and go, yep, we're just doing the same thing with CO2. So we're doing these retrofits, and now we're getting these calls saying, this thing's not working. It's not sized the same way anymore.
Yeah.
So that's that is the big thing, and the kind of the really takeaway that everybody should have on this is when you start seeing these, and they just have to be sized properly. So you have to have that.
I wish all the OEMs would size to the evaporator load and not the compressor load.
Right.
Like, so it seems to be an issue all the time with they all size to the compressor load, and they got two extra compressors on this rack, and it's never going to run that.
Right.
So I'm looking at the sheet here, and I'm going to take a mid one, but so it says discharge CFM for this one model, 28-inch. It says 20 CFM or 20 discharge CFM can go down to 5. So you're essentially just about going down just almost a quarter of the
correct.
Wow.
Yep.
And still has full 100%.
You're going to see, so it's not a perfect line. So at full capacity, at full DCFM rating,
okay,
we're anticipating that 99% effective.
Okay.
When you get to the lower end, mm-hmm, the threshold is we did not want to go below 95%.
Oh,
that's efficiency. Great.
So that's the threshold.
That's still amazing.
Yeah, to go down to 5 CFM like that and still have 95.
It's when they pull down the nightshades. That's when that's going
to happen. Yeah, no, it's the truth. There's plenty of like chains out there that like they're small and they can't. They pull the nightshades down and then everything just crashes.
So besides, like you said, you're taking the approach where you're like undersizing a little bit. What else have you added internally, or can you not let go of the secret sauce of what makes this different than the bad red one?
Yeah. So we're adding some provisions inside of this.
Okay.
And some stripping media that's going to help, but theoretical numbers you can't predict what that's going to do.
Okay.
So that's why we're working with a lot of manufacturers to validate how much that's helping. But the ratings we have on there are strictly centrifugal.
And there's basically no way for this to fail. There's no moving components.
Correct.
There's no.
The only thing is if you grenade, I believe is your
yes,
term.
That's the term that I use.
A compressor and it just dumps junk inside.
Valve plates.
Now, that's going to be the problem. Or cleanliness.
Wouldn't an easy fix to that be like a Y strainer before it? I know we use a lot of Y strainers in the liquid, but like having an OEM say, okay, if you're going to use a separator, you need a Y strainer in front of it.
I honestly don't know what that would do to oil quality or separation, and that's got to be something that's got to be investigated. Is like, hey, what to prevent a catastrophic problem that then just contaminates the filter or the oil separator to the point where you have to just change out the separator. That's something we probably should have some conversations with some people about.
Some kind of access in the bottom, like just in case you have a grenade entry,
right?
You know, just so you can actually see if there's any kind of junk inside of that bottom that centrifugal.
The only thing that we're trying to stay away from is the level of leak, because everybody's trying to get leak joints out of this thing.
One GWP, who cares?
Yeah, the only problem with like separator style stuff, unless it's K or it's
XHP.
XHP, I always say it backwards. I'm dyslexic.
Yeah, no, I get it.
It's the only problem, if it's not that and it's stainless, that's where the problem comes in, because getting it out and getting it back in, and some of these manufacturers are not giving us any room to TIG weld in here. Like, I mean, you can barely get a TIG head or TIG wand around some of this stuff. So it's, yeah, that's where like, I think a Y strainer would be killer.
All right. We'll have to, the conversations so far this week have been, let's talk about this some more. We need to look at an application for this. So I think as we go along, these types of conversations, we'll have probably some larger sizes. We'll have maybe a variation that we may add to this. But again, that's the whole point of getting this out there.
No, I from my experience with this thing already, like I would much rather have a centrifugal separator. I think it does awesome. I watched this thing run for 2 days with just a flash tank load and no oil issues.
How much oil did you end up taking out? Because did you go from coal?
No, it was a brand new startup.
Oh,
so like
okay.
it ran for 2 days until they were ready to do switchover. And we were starting up a store. It was, I charged it, I put the oil in, and it's just running on its own. And it was cold out, and it was just waiting for system to start up. And it was like, okay, here's 3 5-door cases. Here's
still separating.
2 walk-in
still
coils.
Separating.
Like, we're adding to it as we went. So, I mean, it's still separated beautiful. No oil issues, no low oil anything. It was great.
So that's really the challenge, too, is just the systems are going to have to be clean. And it's going to be a Y strainer is going to help, but depending on the micron rating, all the other stuff, because, you know, valve plates and all that stuff, that's going
to
catch
it. We just want it to catch shrapnel.
It's easy to catch the valve plate pieces.
And then that's a good thing for you, because then you can put the Delta P monitor across it.
Yep.
So when the Delta P monitor, right. you have some things that have grenaded. Now you have to clean the strainer. So it's a double sell for you.
It seems like a lot of the OEMs are going away from not having liquid cores in the racks to installing liquid cores in the racks. So I think that's starting to help clean up a lot of that. I think there's only one manufacturer that does not run a liquid core, and they run a Y strainer, which that's an issue. But every other manufacturer that I've started up here lately, even the ones from overseas, they're running a liquid core, and it makes it a lot easier to keep the rack clean. Okay. And then the other thing is the oil filters. We're starting to see oil filters, which you guys have an oil filter, right?
Yes. Yeah. The oil line.
Yeah.
And we went against that take apart. Hi-Lock model.
I hate that thing.
Everybody, you're not the only person.
With a passion.
So we developed one and has a much larger capacity strainer in it.
Yeah.
But we didn't want to just be like a Me Too, come out with a strainer, because then it becomes this battle of who wants to sell it for the least amount of money.
Yeah.
So then we launched it with a built-in sight glass in it as well. And then we also have the inlet and the outlet away from the port that you actually service the screen from.
So you just take out it and service the
isolate
filter.
It.
Yeah.
See that's nice. That Hi-Lock screen, I don't know how many times I've dropped that damn gasket, and then I'm looking through the bottom of it, and I'm looking all of it in the snow trying to find the.
And it's small.
Yes.
Like a dime.
Yes.
Diameter.
And it literally plugs up in 2 seconds. If there's any carryover, especially on startup, like it's. I'll end up cleaning them like 2 or 3 times just from the welding process on the racks. As clean as they could be, it's still...
Well, that's what I wanted to bring up. So that's my only concern, is that a lot of times, and I've seen it firsthand, he's talked about it a bunch of times, where you have the stainless steel piping, and there's slag and garbage in there. And that first round of oil coalescing filters that you have are just plugged. That's, the manufacturer's going to have to be a little bit cleaner and make sure they have better practices so they don't cause...
That's just playing out, like them not purging and them not purging nitrogen or a non-condensable gas. And
I forget what it's called. It's
purge. It's for them not using argon.
Yeah, that's
when,
it.
When they're TIG welding. It is what it is. It is 100% what it is. It's sugar dust.
But what I'm saying is that you're going to have to watch that if we're going to start... So, I mean, all the plug-ups that they have in the coalescer. Go ahead and continue. I'm sorry. I keep segueing all over the place.
Well, no, that's
all
right. So I think that's, with the strainer, that's where we talked about the oil separator. But, again, we're coming out with products that we're trying to address service issues.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got the centrifugal that we're doing from a service standpoint on oil separation. We think that we're going to be able to handle the larger oil concentration. We got the strainer,
mm-hmm.
and that's really based on, the strainer is what it is, but we really come out with a side glass because I'm on rooftops and trying to help them troubleshoot stuff. I'm like, how do you guys know that there's not oil separating between the two of them? And they're like,
you don't.
Know.
You just guess and take it apart.
Temperature, maybe.
Yeah, no. It's literally guess and take it apart. Like, it's no flow, it apart.
Solenoid's cycling. It's reading oil. I'm like, how do you know it's actually reading? The sensors are reading oil, and it's in the back. It's just, so I'm like, we gotta get something with a sight glass.
You're essentially doing Schrodinger's cat at that time. I don't know what it's in there.
Well,
it's
I'm gonna try this one. This one's the quickest, and hopefully the oil starts flowing because
this one's the easiest to work at right now when it's 0 degrees outside. Let's do that one first.
So then we got the differential monitor for coalescing, and that is strictly for service.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't add any value to anybody else's life when it comes to the customer or the OEMs. It's really just about service.
It's going to end up saving the customer money. I would say that because a lot of times, as well as I do, oil issues are one of the biggest things when it comes to rack and light industrial refrigeration.
The biggest thing from the oil monitor, and I'll say this, like the... is the light with the reset button, because I don't know how many times
Of the higher
because differentials. When a guy gets there, it's usually already blown reset, and the light on there where you got to push it and reset it.
Yeah,
on the one that I put in a long time ago, like that was great. It's gone off, and like we've got a high diff alarm, but then the guy gets there and it's 1-2 pounds, but then he looks at it and it's okay. The light's on. It blew at some point.
That's the nice thing about having the feedback from it, too. At our training center, we actually have it hooked up where we have it, the signal brought back, so we have that alarm. But like you said,
what if it's...
The sample rate,
If it's 2-3 days out of logs and...
Every 2 minutes,
So do you think that it should... Because this is simple software to fix that. So the question is, what that needs to be over 12 for more than 10 seconds, consecutive seconds.
I would think less. Do you think a filter would blow? What does a filter usually blow at? What's the
much, so filters do not blow out, and I'm talking the filter, not the
gasket. What are they?
Our filter will, the actual filter housing will blow before that R gasket.
Really?
Now there's other filters. Yeah. That will blow out.
But what are their filters like? What is like a general like time? Like how long could it be?
Well, I think you get within seconds, you get a compressor cycle that can blow out that gasket.
I would think then you guys would need to lower that diff alarm down to 2 seconds then.
No, I think we just stop putting those elements in and put our elements
in.
Yeah.
Get rid of the red ones.
Yeah. Because your issue is that you want to see less nuisance on the blinking red.
Mm-hmm. I don't care about the blinking red. The blinking red is great to me. If it hits 12 pounds on the blinking red,
you want
to
know.
There's an issue. Right. Like something's wrong. Like the filter's loaded up. Right. You got oil carryover.
Right.
I'd rather see the blinking red. I'd rather see a service guy walk in there, he gets a high diff alarm, or they have oil issues, and the store didn't call in the high diff alarm for forever. It gets buried in a bunch of other alarms.
Right.
But he walks up and he sees the red lights on the oil diff, and he's like, oh, at some point that thing had a high differential and blew the filter probably.
The only thing, the reason why we did 10 seconds is we were looking at when you get on like a compressor starting to kick on, you get that pulsation.
Yeah. That's what I was going to bring up,
So 2 seconds is, man, you may get a red light every...
So every time I'm cycling on the compressor, right?
I guess you can see that. Like 10 seconds gives you a little bit of a buffer. I like it. I think it works great. The red light is like the biggest selling feature. Yeah, the feedback signal is great, but like the red light, it's simple and it's manual reset.
Right. And it doesn't reset anything other than just the light. That's the big thing that people are like, when I push this button, does it reset the whole thing?
Nope. No.
It's just that LED just for you had a possible overpressure situation. Yeah,
that is the best feature of that, just for the fact that a newer guy can walk up and say there's 200 alarms in the controller because the rack is down, and he's looking through all this stuff, and he's overwhelmed.
Right.
But like then he looks, he's, okay, the light's on, the rack is down, yada, yada, yada. Get the rack back going. I blew the oil separator filter.
Yep.
That is the key for that, making that as simple as possible. And you guys did it with that, and I think it's a great product.
Appreciate that. But we didn't do that without the help of you guys and some others that got it out there, gave us feedback, because the blinking red, we did that, but we got some feedback from a few others like, hey, we got some compressor cycling going on. And so it's like, as I'm standing here, I got to push the button. It's like, yeah, it's not blown out. It's just, I got compressors coming on. So we drew that out a little bit.
And they'll be able to see that once they restart it, right? Because they'll be able to see where the actual differential is. If it's all the way down the toilet, then you know that you definitely did blow it out.
Right. So.
And I have seen it go off with oil. We've had a lot of oil care, like you're talking about. The filter loads up. I mean, it does
totally
make a pressure.
Saturated.
But there's a problem there still. Like it's not just going off for no reason. Like there's a physical problem. Like you have a lot of oil carryover. So like it's something that still needs addressed.
And the CO2. So we initially launched it for non-CO2 applications. The one you tried out for us when we did the pilot run. But then the CO2 one is exceptionally more important, because there is... transducers are, there's a tolerance on those, and it's roughly 10% between the two of them. So now you're 20% of 2,000 PSI.
Mm-hmm. They're all over the place.
That's over the range that a filter really needs to be changed out anyway. So mm-hmm. by calibrating the transducers, we've lowered that to plus or minus 2 PSI on the CO2 model. And let's face it, if you can get the service tools on there, those systems are going to be less of a problem.
Sense a common theme. It seems like a lot of manufacturers that we talk to, they're trying to make it easier on the service tech, because to cause those nuisance where they now realize what's going on in there.
Sure. So again, we got this product, we have the strainer, we have the differential monitor. Those are probably the three newest things we've had within the year that we've launched, and it's all based on service, nothing else.
What manufacturers are we going to see? Like, I know you were talking, like, there's some customers that are, like, they're now saying that, hey, this is an awesome product, I want this on there. Like, what?
You mean the differential monitor?
Differential monitor.
I still have to work on the customers. The
customers need to listen.
So I'm working on them.
Yeah.
And then if I can get them to say, OEM, mm-hmm. we want this, then it makes it, let's face it, I've worked with Kevin on a few things to say, I want you to try to work on this customer a little bit, because he's like, I've got a problem here. So yeah, I'm going to run this up the thing and get some people's attention. This is what's going on, and this is going to help fix it.
Same thing with the oil filter with the sight glass on it. Like, where are we going to see those coming out the gate? Still working on it?
People are starting to use them.
Okay.
It's just a matter of it's always this thing about it needs to be specified. It needs to be on the spec. If it's not on the spec, then we're not putting it on there. I got to get the end users to put it on the spec.
Gotcha.
To that granular level.
Gotcha, because a lot of things come into, hey, we've been using this for years and it's okay, but why are we going to change everything now? Because then they're going to have to change the pieces. Because you were talking about, I believe at one point they were going to spec new pieces because a lot of these are they pre-make all the bends and stuff
Correct.
On the oil line. So right. now they're speccing it. When they are speccing this one type of oil filter, they're changing it out
right.
to that in order to accommodate that.
Correct, and that's, when you look at some of these products, it's all about cost.
Yeah.
People are like, I can't, we're not going to put this on there unless they ask for it, and it comes down to, yeah, but do you realize what the implications on some of these things? It's just what you're spending on this component, you're spending it 10 times for some of the problems that you're facing.
Some of the service issues they're having.
You save $10 to lose $30,000 in compressors.
Right. So ultimately, that's my responsibility. I'm working on the end users to get the thing specified so then it's being used, and I'm not faulting the OEMs for the fact that if they're not asking for it, then I can't just give them something. They it's like, hey, like an oil change. Oh, we did an oil change and we also changed your tires and all this other stuff, so here's the bill.
No, I got you.
So I got it. That's some work I'm doing, but I will tell you that at that level, just even yesterday, the reception on all these things we're talking about is very positive.
Awesome. Adam, we're almost coming up at the end of our time. Is there anything else that you want to discuss?
Ultimately, I just want to thank you guys for what you're doing, because I know the podcast has got a great reception across.
It does?
It does. I
mean, are you sure?
For comedic relief and also
you're
some
not
education.
Talking to the people I'm talking yeah. to, them, man.
And I just want to thank, because there is truly a change. I was texting a guy last night that was having some, he had some questions for me, and they would have not known who I am if it weren't for the conversations we have.
Oh, really?
And because okay. I just know it. Between the what you guys do on the podcast and the involvement you guys have on the social media, the Facebook group. And,
yeah.
And so without the things that you guys are doing, I think it's helping connect techs to people like myself or Rusty Walker. Some of these people are like, yeah, I've had this great reception to this, or hey, this is the person you probably need to talk to and you have a question. So I think that doing what you guys are doing is probably connecting more people and getting results and feedback that would have never happened, honestly.
And just on a side note, I want to say thank you, but one of the biggest things is that's one of the hardest things. Like, you never know who to reach out to.
Right.
Like, guys will ask me, like, who do you reach out to when you have a problem? I was like, the engineers. I was like, if I can't figure it out, if the manufacturers give me all the data and I'm stuck at that point, I go up to the manufacturer and say, hey, man, how is this supposed to work? Because, like I've said this a million times, if you know how it's supposed to work, what parts make it up, and what part's not working, I mean, you can figure out essentially what's causing that issue.
And I appreciate you always jumping in, the helping guys. I mean, there's not too many engineers that'll jump on that Facebook group and start answering questions and helping guys. I mean, that says a lot for you guys. I don't know too many engineers that are designing things that'll take that feedback and
take it in the teeth if you need to.
Yeah, take it in the teeth and do something about it. And it says a lot about you guys.
And so I'll tell you a quick story. So I had a guy.
Put his phone number on the podcast.
Yeah, had a guy reach out to me.
Yeah.
Said, hey, I've got this issue, and I saw that you guys, that I was the person that could possibly. Basically, what he said is, I've got this other guy that I'm working with, and he said, your name came up, and you're the person that can probably help me with this oil issue. And so I helped him, and he was like, man, that was quick. He goes, I can't, there's not many, and as a component manufacturer.
Yeah.
There tends to be this stigma. It's like, I've got this problem, and you know what? I've had this problem, and I don't know who to talk to, and I'm just pissed, and and it creates this, if I had known about the issue, and that's myself or Emerson or Parker, if you don't know about it, you can't fix it. And so creating this connection to allow us component manufacturers to create a, remove the barrier so we can actually fix the issues, because a lot of times you just don't hear about it. So that's the opportunities that we have.
That's one thing that we ride the line on borderline, where we're like, we want to talk about something, we don't want to bash something entirely, but like, we need to talk about it, because otherwise the manufacturer will be like, oh, everything's fine.
Yeah.
Everything's fine, nothing's on fire, everything's fine. But right. like, then you have these technicians that are mad at the fact that they have these issues, they're not being heard.
Yep.
So like, we find it, that's one of the things I think that we do well.
Yep.
Kevin more than me, letting everyone know essentially that, constructive criticism, creative, yes, letting everyone know that, hey, we have this issue, we want to be heard, because if you're not going to help us handle it, we got to be heard somehow.
Yep.
And I appreciate you for being an advocate for that as well.
No problem.
All right. Thanks, sir. All right, I appreciate you coming on.
Yep.